Hello and welcome to the Business Growth Show, where we talk about all components of business and how to utilize them for exponential growth. My name is Nathan Cassiotis. I'm a business growth expert who helps business owners grow and scale to create wealth and freedom. Today, I have an awesome guest. His name is Will Wang, and he's the head of growth marketing at Growth Labs, a fractional CMO, data-driven copywriter, speaker, and angel investor. And Will started freelancing as a copywriter to pursue his passion in for writing. And he matches his experience in number crunching with the copy he writes and is able to help his clients improve their sales without any extra investment in ads. And after going through a bad experience using a marketing agency for his family business, Will decided to help other business owners get results in their marketing. And his focus at Growth Labs is to help B2B SaaS, tech, and fintech companies grow. And he's been able to help and serve fast-growing tech companies like Airwallex, Intelmatics, and Vishua. Welcome, Will Wang, and thank you for being on my show.
Hey, Finn, mate. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, awesome, mate. So it's going to be a great show today for everyone watching and listening. And you're a very successful entrepreneur. Just for those people who don't know who you are, please introduce yourself by telling us about you and your journey.
Yeah, sure. Mate, I always stumble when I like very successful, because obviously definition of success varies and it changes and the goalpost moves, right? But so thank you for saying that. But I guess with my journey, how I started was I used to be in corporate IT. I used to be what they call a business intelligence analyst or a data analyst, which is a fancy term for just literally sitting behind a spreadsheet all day, every day. So not the most exciting job. Really didn't like what I was doing, where I was going. And I just looked down the career path 30 years down the path and said, look, you know, looking at everyone who's walked the journey, I don't want to be there. Like, that's not where I want to spend the next 30 years of my life doing. I don't like the end goal. It's just not what I want to do. So that kind of led me to thinking about what kind of businesses should I do. And at that point, I was trying everything. I tried, you know, affiliate marketing, I tried e-commerce, I tried all this kind of stuff. But the challenge I had was that my corporate job actually paid me quite well. So it was a six-figure salary, and to hit six figures in profit on an e-commerce store, you got to sell a lot of widgets, especially if it's like a $20 widget. So the next logical move was, okay, well, how can I replace the income as quickly as possible? Just because I had two young kids at home and, you know, my wife was at home taking care of kids. So how can I replace this income so I can leave the job? And so I've always been fascinated by copy, grew up in a pretty rough neighborhood in Western Sydney. And so my escape, you know, before and after school was kind of running to the local library. And I love, you know, just reading sci-fi and all that kind of stuff. So really reading and writing was kind of something that I was really passionate about, but I never thought I could turn it into an actual job or business. But fast forward, you know, from that point on, probably about 6 or 7 years. Well, actually, we've been in business about 7 years, right now, going into our eighth year. And, you know, we've kind of evolved all the services. It's still built on really, really good copywriting and conversion and, you know, writing stuff on the paper that makes people want to buy, essentially. But now we do a lot more than just a copy. You know, we do lead generation. We do cold emailing for clients. We build marketing and sales funnels. And all of that kind of good stuff. But, you know, started definitely from just freelancing, looking at, well, you know, how can I help these businesses without kind of taking them for a ride, like a lot of other agencies at that time were.
Yeah, awesome, man. Great journey, and love, you know, how that passion and challenges from a young age and where it's transpired and got you to where you are now, using those skills and growing from them, you know, with extra things that you're providing to the market. And I guess, yeah, you're big on in the B2B marketing landscape, which is, you know, a great place to be in business. Just initially, like, what are you seeing, I guess, as some trends, right? Like, what is happening at the moment in the B2B space, especially, you know, post-COVID, I guess, and how things are changing?
Yeah, there's ups and downs. And and each industry is very specifically got its own challenges and its own upsides. So for instance, we do a lot of work, as you kind of mentioned, in tech, right? In big tech. And what happened was, COVID was actually pretty amazing for a lot of tech companies. People started using technology more. They had no choice. They had all these savings because they couldn't travel. And so they just spent on technology and entertainment at home, all this kind of stuff. So it was actually a really great time if you look at the numbers for a lot of tech companies. And post-COVID, though, what's really happened is as we kind of dipped into this downturn, at the start of this, at the start of 2023, funding or investment into tech dropped off the cliff. Like, literally fell off by 80% overnight. And so that created really hard times where previously tech companies used to focus on growth, like growth at all costs. And when they, you don't have money coming in, investors aren't pouring money into your business anymore. Now you've got to switch the model and actually be profitable. So for instance, that's one industry where it's like, okay, things are kind of shaken up and they've really gone back to the basis of like, can we have good marketing rather than not caring about how much we spend to acquire customers? How do we market more effectively? And so, you know, that's just one industry. In other industries, I'm seeing the trend kind of like a similar way where, you know, there's less, the media keeps going on about cost of living. So people have less money to spend. People are a little bit more guarded and a little bit more wary about committing to spending, especially, you know, with subscriptions and things like that. So that's kind of one trend. But what that means is that businesses are going, you know, you've got to have more trust with your customers before they even buy from you. So that's kind of some of the changes. And there are ways to get around that, and, you know, happy to dive into some of the stuff that we're doing for clients and some of the stuff we're seeing. But yeah, it is a bit of a slower market. It is, you know, people are taking a little bit longer to make decisions, but it's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah. Awesome, man. Love that. Definitely things are changing. Good to be aware of. So let's talk about, I guess, some of these lead generation tactics. You talk a bit about trust there. We all want leads, right? And quality leads at the same time, you know, there. So what are some, I guess, some tactics or, you know, strategies that we can be, you know, utilizing in for B2B, right? That we can, you know, have into our business that's going to, you know, make an impact.
Yeah, definitely. So the core of what we're doing at the moment, if you look at, you know, the services we're providing to our clients, 56% of what we're doing is actually cold email outreach. And the reason why cold emails are still kind of working well is because, you know, recently the ad platforms like Facebook ads, for example, Google with the data, it's all changing so rapidly and it's very up and down, right? I was writing my own copy the other day and one analogy I came up with was like the performance of ads at the moment, it's like having a kangaroo on a trampoline in an earthquake. Like it's just so unpredictable. So the reason why we do a lot of cold emails and why I think it's still an amazing tactic for businesses is because you can still, you know, there's none of the up and downs. It's completely scalable in terms of the performance of it. And it's actually going directly to your target market. So before you reach out to someone, you should and you must do the research to know that if they're a good lead or not, because otherwise you just don't need to reach out to them. Whereas, for example, with other strategies like advertising, like I still, don't get me wrong, I still love it. We still manage advertising for our clients. It's still all good. But the lead quality is very variable. Like you just don't know who's coming in and actually giving you details. Whereas reaching out to someone, you can control that. You can control the lead quality. So that's one of the ways that we're doing so. Just building a list, filtering them before we even reach out to them.
Yeah, awesome, man. Love that. And love the point about, yeah, filtering and how you're doing it differently, right? Because I think that's important, is understanding, like, you're not just necessarily sending the same message, right, to everybody in your database, because they're all at different points, whether they've potentially, you know, just a prospect that haven't bought from you before, or, you know, maybe they're, you know, a bit warmer in that way. So we've got to be thinking a bit differently, right, on how we, you know, market to them. Is that something that, you know, is there, and what are some key differences, I guess, do you think on how people should be thinking about this with, some of, I guess, the best practices, right, around their email marketing?
Yeah, definitely. So one of the things I look at, because the last thing that we want to do is, you know, send really bad emails, because people already get enough spam, they get enough crap in the inboxes, they don't need another irrelevant, you know, real bad emails. So the way that we look at it is, you know, thinking about the warmth of the audience. So sometimes when it's a completely cold audience, they're not ready to buy right now. And especially in terms of B2B sales, like when you've got deal sizes where it's like six figures, seven figures, potentially eight figure deals, they're not going to buy on a whim, right? They're not going to make a buying decision in 24 hours. So it's more just like, where do we start the relationship and how do we nurture the relationship? So for instance, with one of my clients, things started getting slow when we started going directly for phone calls. So this was kind of early during the year and we looked at it and said, look, I think people need more trust before they're willing to even take a phone call with you. Let's pivot. And so rather than going and emailing directly to try and get a sales call, we changed the strategy where now we email to give value to people. And the only ask is, hey, can I send this thing to you and add you to our newsletter where we give even more value and content? And by doing that, we've warmed them up and, you know, it doesn't slow down the sales process. If anything, because the trust is there and they're getting value from you, people actually start coming through and prompting, oh, actually, I was thinking about this. do you actually help provide the service? And so that's one of the ways that we've seen, you know, to shift people from cold to warm and still build it for the long term and get the short term results.
Yeah, awesome, man. Love that. Yeah, the B2B sales cycles, always an interesting one. The bigger the deal, you know, can take longer. So, you know, good that you're helping speed up the process to an extent, right? Which I think is important for these challenges. So let's talk about, I guess, apart from email marketing now, right? Like, what are some of the other, I guess, marketing campaigns that, you know, you're seeing and doing in the market that are working?
Yeah, so we're still doing, you know, some advertising, whether it's on LinkedIn or on Facebook. We're still building funnels and writing copy. So even though it's harder to do, I actually think it's actually a good thing, because the real good products and the real good companies, real good marketers can float to the top and everybody else is sinking. So we are still doing, for example, VSL or video sales letter funnels. And that's where you get people to watch a 10-minute video. If you give them value, if you know, you talk about a problem that you can solve and that they have the problem, they opt in and say, hey, can I talk to someone on your sales team? So we still run those types of strategies and they are still working really well. Besides from that, you know, content is kind of becoming quite good in terms of using podcasts, for example, as a way to generate leads directly and or to even build relationships with people. Beyond that, you know, I see events, face-to-face events, making really a strong comeback. And, you know, fundamentally where, you know, people still like connecting with people, they still like the face-to-face stuff. So that, you know, we help our clients and support them with in you know, kind of doing that. So between funnels, between cold emails, between, you know, doing videos and content and events, that's generally good enough to fill the sales pipeline for most of our clients.
Yeah. Awesome, man. Love that. With all of those areas, great points around that, and definitely can confirm, like around the podcast area, right? You know, podcasts are, you know, as we're here today, there, and you know, it's I guess it's a two-pronged approach, but if you have your own, then it can be a great way to connect you know, with people there and you know, potentially create some partnerships or get clients. There's a lot of different ways of building them out. And yeah, love the event side and things. So let's get a little bit more deeper now. You know, because I guess when you're doing something first in the marketing, normally there's a headline, right? Like there's something that needs to grab you at the start. So what do you think is some key fundamentals, I guess, of how we can come up with, I guess, eye-catching headlines or something that's going to be like, okay, I'm interested. Let me learn more about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is stuff that I geek out about. So stop me if I go too deep. but there's a couple of interesting principles that I like to think through when it comes to, you know, writing headlines or just copy in general. And those two principles, I didn't come up with it, you know, came up with by people much smarter than me. One of the principles is from this amazing marketing copywriter by the name of John Carlton. And what principle I got from John was this idea of a one-legged golfer. So John wrote a campaign for a golf product where he was, you know, talking to his client who's a golf coach. His client was telling him, oh, you know, actually, I'm teaching this guy who only had one leg, and I was teaching him how to do the drive, and I saw that he hit it really differently, blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm not a golfer, so I'm not going to pretend like I know the golfing, you know, how golfers speak. But John's like, well, hang on, whoa, like, slow it down. Like, what do you mean one-legged golfer? Because the golfing coach had been teaching for so long, and, you know, it was just like something that's kind of normal. Like, it's just part of what he did. But for anyone on the outside, be like, whoa, like that's so weird, like so different, that it just instantly grabs your attention. So the first thing I look at or that I think about when I write headlines is, what is my one-legged golfer in this market? The second principle that I kind of go back and think about before I even put pen to paper is one from Charlie Munger, who recently just passed away. Absolute genius when it comes to business and investing. And Charlie's you know, one line that really stuck out when I was reading Charlie's book and learning from him was the idea that people don't move through greed, or people that it's not through greed, it's through envy, right? Greed doesn't move the world, envy does. So I combine the two of them and say, well, can I write a headline that is, you know, curiosity driven? It gets people really wondering, like, what the heck is this all about? But in a way that's relevant for them, but also in a way that might tie in, I have a little bit of fear, a little bit of greed, or a little bit of envy if possible. So those are the combinations that I'm thinking through as I write copy.
Yeah. Awesome, man. Love it. And let's get a bit deeper into copy, because I think it's changing and it's a skill, right? And I think it's interesting now with AI, right, coming into the space as well, where people are like, oh, I can just chat it, chat GPT or something like that, but then you don't necessarily want to sound like everybody else at the same time with what you're writing, but it can be good in terms of that. So I guess from your side, like, what are you seeing? Are you using some of this AI, or are there certain, I guess, principles in copywriting to make sure that you're keeping people engaged and wanting to then move them forward to take, you know, maybe some sort of action, right, in the market as well?
Yeah, so it's a really good question. So AI, you know, I was very, like, I was worried when it first came out. I was like, oh man, if it gets really, really good, like, what are we going to do? Because we're so copy focused, right? We're direct response copy focused. If it takes our jobs, what are we going to do? At this point in time, I'm actually, the more I use it, so I use it every single day, and I'll give you the context into how I use it. But the more I use it, the more I'm not worried that it's going to replace, people like yourself who write direct response and sales copy. So it's a great tool for content. It's a great tool for research. You know, it speeds up the research. It speeds up, I used to have to spend at least 20 hours for each big copy project, just really reading through all these forums and on Reddit and on Twitter and following what people are saying, reading reviews on Amazon books, all that kind of stuff. And AI just makes that so much faster for me now. So it's really cut down on research time. Although sometimes AI can be the great liar, right? It can give you wrong information. So that's something you're going to be very careful of. In terms of writing content, yeah, like it's okay. But it's just not, like, it's not at the level where it can replace a really great copywriter. And I don't think it's going to take a while before it can get onto it, because there's just so much nuance in direct response copy. And I don't think, that kind of copy is, there's not enough data around that type of copy for it to really start learning as effectively as just general content, for example.
Yeah, cool, man. Nice. No, I love that. That's, really powerful on that side of things. So I guess then, like, so you're using the AI, right? I know you're the data geek, but at least you don't have to spend all the time, gathering all the data. And I've been an analyst when I'm growing up as well. So as much as we love it, it's nice to cut it down in that way too. And then, just get to where we get into it. And I guess, are we using like stories and things like that? Like, what are some components in there that really are people going to read this, right? Because that's the key thing. It's, I guess, one thing's reading it and being engaged. And then can we do some sort of action, whether it doesn't have to be a hard call to action, but it could be some sort of action in the copy to move them forward.
Yeah, so like story and everything like that is amazing. Like I use so much stories. I mean, one of the ways that I do my copy is I take the sci-fi stuff that I love reading about, like the sci-fi stories, and I look at, hey, how did they tell a story that's so engaging that you're reading like a 600 page book, you're flying for it and staying up all night reading it. So that definitely is a part of, the writing that we do. But also, like, if you boil it down, right, if you have to think about what makes someone read like a 600 page novel, okay, I've got to think about what really keeps someone glued to either a video or a book or whatever it is. One, there's entertainment, fine, storytelling. But the second one, if it's actually not like a nonfiction book, what are people trying to get from this? Well, generally, the way I think about it is, if they're reading direct copy, it's about relevance. Like, is this thing relevant for them in their lives? So for example, if you look at, again, this is an example that might be wrong, but like bodybuilders go and start geeking out about every single milligram of stuff that they put into their bodies to get bigger, right? Stuff like with weird names that just not even, it's literally another language. And they will go and spend hours and hours reading, hundreds of pages, looking at the different compounds and almost giving themselves a chemistry degree to try and get bigger muscles. So if you look at it from that perspective, like for the average person, that stuff is so boring. You'll spend 2 minutes reading it and then you'll bounce off. But what keeps a bodybuilder so glued to this kind of stuff when they probably didn't even enjoy school, but now they've almost got like a half a chemistry degree? And it's because it's relevant and it's going to get them to a goal or a destination they want to get to. So that's kind of where I start with in my copy. I want my copy to be so boring for the wrong people that potentially 80% of the audience just doesn't even read it. They look at the headline and go, not for me, I'm moving on. That's actually what I want to do. Because I know if I do that, 20% of the people who read it, the message is so relevant to them. We're solving a pain point that's so pronounced to them that they're going to go for it, no matter, you know, how you structure, what stories you tell. It's just, can you get out of your own way and just make it easy to read and consume versus, you know, we've got to be fancy or tricky. But it's all about like the relevance and the research and the thinking that goes towards before you even put a single bit of ink to paper. And so that's kind of, you know, it also ties back into AI. I think it's like, AI can do the writing part. That's easy. It's the thinking that people don't do, which leads to great or bad writing. So it's the thinking piece behind it that, you know, I spend most of my time on.
Yeah, I love that. It's learning how to think and loving that part of that, the relevance in there, which is so important these days, you know, to influence people. And even like I know when I do my speaking at an event, I was at a recent event and someone was speaking on stage and I just said to them after, I said, listen, you didn't make it relevant for everyone at the start. You asked the question, but it was only for a certain part, which is okay, right? So in the copy, you want to do that. But sometimes if you're in a room, you got to make sure that maybe people are at different stages, right? In their journey and to make it relevant for them. So love that. Relevance is so important depending on the context. Let's get into funnels now. I think this is big now, right? With a lot of, you know, people wanting to, you know, do funnels in a variety of funnels. And you've mentioned a few different types here. You know, what are you seeing of funnels and some steps? Because you mentioned like the VSL, right? For example, where you go in, people put their details in, they get to watch this training, and then maybe they book a call or something like that, right? Or your team reaches out, you know, or you reach out to, you know, to then start a conversation and go from there. Is that sort of, you know, simple type of funnels that are working? Is there other ones there that, you know, we should be looking at, I guess, in the B2B space?
Yeah, so I've always had the philosophy that that marketers came for an overcomplicated funnels for no good reason. So, you know, I think it's gotten a lot better now, but even like 2 or 3 years ago, some of the funnels were like, you know, opt-in, tripwire, and there's all these weird names, right? Like tripwire, and then self-liquidating offer, and, you know, one-click upsell, all that kind of stuff, and just made it really complicated. The funnels that we see working, especially in B2B, like, you know, the stuff that we see work now, it's pretty much going to work in the future, and it's worked in the past. It's literally just, you know, here's the problem that we think we solve. Do you have this problem? If you do, we can talk to you and see if our solution matches what you're looking for. So the simpler you can get it, the better. Our top funnels at the moment, there's two that we actively run for most of our clients. One is literally, you know, that VSL funnel. Hey, give us your name and email. We'll send you this video that I think can solve your problem. If you think we've done a good enough job explaining the problem and giving you an intro to how we solve it, here's a link to book a call with us. Like super, super simple, still very, very effective if you can nail the thinking part right. The second funnel that we run for our clients, it's called an application funnel. So long form copy or a video, and it's like apply to get the solution that we have. It's as simple as that. And like it might, you know, the funnel in and of itself isn't the magic. It's the thinking, it's the psychology behind all of the marketing. So the funnel is actually pretty easy to do. Like there's so many good software pieces to do that. But just keep it as simple as possible and just come back to, you know, spend 80% of your time thinking for the problem, not writing or just trying to put things up online.
Yeah, love that. So powerful with doing all of those areas around the funnel there. It's so important putting all that in, mate. Love that area there. So let's talk a bit more about LinkedIn. You know, you've touched on it already, and I see LinkedIn as a big space, for B2B, for social media there. And to my understanding, like ads are a bit expensive on LinkedIn, like compared to something like Meta, Facebook and Insta that are doing it there. So, you know, what are you seeing? Because obviously there's Sales Navigator on LinkedIn that you can do and you can reach out, you know, find people that way compared to, you know, running ads. So what are your thoughts around LinkedIn and some strategies on there?
Yeah, so we actually used to be on LinkedIn a lot more. So we even sold a service where we did outreach for our clients on LinkedIn, but we stopped that service about 2.5-3 years ago, just because LinkedIn, you know, it's getting a lot stricter in terms of how many people you can connect with, how many messages you can send. And I think that's a great thing, because fundamentally it is meant to be a social network, not like a network where you go and, you know, just spam the crap out of everyone. So I think LinkedIn actually made a pretty good move in limiting, you know, what you can do there, which some people are kind of, you know, they were spamming hundreds of people every single day and just getting a one phone call, something like that. So I think the way I think about it is LinkedIn's a great database for us to build relationships with. When I'm on LinkedIn, I'm connecting not necessarily with the intent to sell, although sometimes that can happen. I'm looking to connect with other people who potentially serve my audience and who are creating amazing content, and, you know, just learn from them and share ideas with them that can help both of us. That's my top driver for LinkedIn. Like, can I build relationships? Can I build partnerships? But you know, if you want to connect with your target audience, that's okay as well. Like, there's ways to do that very elegantly and not come across as like another spammer. Like, don't connect and then send your pitch. Like, that's just not the right way to do it. I think content on LinkedIn is still something that's quite good. Like, I'm not great at being consistent with content. You know, when I get busy, I'm like, look, I can just send some emails for myself, generate leads. Why do I need to go and put content? But audience building is becoming more important. So LinkedIn content is actually still a good place to play. And beyond that, you know, I think just the ads, it's okay as well. There's particular businesses where it works really well for, and there's ones that, where it doesn't. If you have a high CLV or customer lifetime value, absolutely. Like, it doesn't matter how much you're paying on your front end. All that matters is, are you profitable and how much once you get a customer come through? And so, you know, you might be paying 10 times more to get a lead from LinkedIn, but is a lead 10 times better in terms of quality? Are they 10 times more likely to convert into a paying client? If they are, and the numbers work in the back end, it still could be a very great way of actually, you know, spending your ad budget.
Yeah, love it, mate. Really powerful. Let's get more around the measurement, right? I think, you know, you touched on a great point there that a lot of people probably wing it, maybe to an extent, unless they're doing it well. So in terms of measuring that ROI, and I think B2B is an interesting one, because it's not necessarily, hey, just buy something and then you know that you've got the sale straight away as well. It can take time in the sales cycle. So, you know, what should we be measuring, right? I guess is one thing. And then how can we measure that to sort of, yeah, make it work well and make sure that we are, yeah, doing right and testing and knowing that we're on the right path with our marketing and then in turn sales.
Yeah, measuring and, you know, the ROI tracking is such a hard thing to do. And because typically in B2B, there's so many different steps, right? So in B2C marketing, two methodologies. One is like, where's the first touch with a customer come from, and where does the last touch come from? But in B2B, it's different, because it could be 100 touch points in between with, you know, 5 different stakeholders, and each of them have their own journey through the buying process. So it's a lot harder to test that way. Even though I come from a data background, I think when it comes to data and tracking is have enough for it to be useful for you to make informed decisions, but not so much that it clogs up your decision-making process. And so one of the one of the lessons I learned from the founders of Atlassian. So just amazing company in Australia, you know, one of the top in the world, Atlassian. Very early on in the journey, I had amazing opportunity to kind of network with them and kind of sit down, you know, during the presentation and roundtable they were doing. And they got asked this question, like, how do you know what's working? Because they don't have a sales team. Like, they don't have a sales team in this multi-billion dollar organization. And so one of the things they said, and this was a little bit earlier on, so obviously context it matters, but they said, well, we were spending $30,000 a month on Google ads, and we just weren't tracking. We just didn't know if it was working or not. So the way that they figured that was, well, they were like, well, next month we're not going to spend that, we're just going to turn off Google ads. And they turned Google ads off, and within 2 days, you know, it was just like, holy crap, we got no leads in pipeline at all. Like, oh crap, scram, we'll turn it back on right now. And then leads started coming back. So like, that's just an example of, like, you don't need to, like, you need to know where the leads are coming from, like what channel, but do you need to know precisely down to, you know, this is the single bit of ad copy that brought in, like, most cases you don't. right? In most cases, you don't even have the budget to do that kind of split testing. So it's just kind of like know enough to make an informed decision, but don't get lost, you know, just in the data itself, because there's often things that we can do in the business that we levers that you can pull. If you get to about 80% of, you know, the results for pulling one lever, don't focus on milking the last 20%, just move on and pull the next lever that gets you way better results.
Yeah, awesome, man. Love that. Really powerful there. Let's talk a bit about software now, because I think this is an important point where a lot of people might be like, oh, I don't know what to use. And obviously, you know, you can look at that. There's a lot of different CRMs or other types of funnel things and, you know, everything like that out there. So I'd love to know your thoughts on, you know, what's decent or, you know, what people should be looking at as potential options there, or just generally what's possible, I guess, with software that they can make their business more efficient and effective, you know, with their marketing as well.
Yeah, this might be controversial, but when it comes to software, I kind of don't care. Like most software things, you know, it's much of a muchness. Like for example, with funnel building software, ClickFunnels is similar to Unbound, similar to lead pages, similar to a million other funnel builders out there. Yes, each has its own pros and cons, and they're all, you know, different in a certain way, but the variance or difference between them is like 10%, right? My question is, does it do 90% or 80% of what I need it to do? If it does, good enough. As a founder, good enough. I don't need to know anything else about this. The cost is typically pretty similar. Like it just doesn't really matter. So for me, it's like, can I focus on other stuff and have the business get built to a level where I can bring in a tech person, and then that's their all-consuming, you know, day-to-day kind of thinking pattern, like what is the best software? As a founder, I really don't care. I'm like, my thought pattern is, what am I as a founder doing today? What decisions am I making today to generate more revenue and more profit? And like the software piece, it's normally such a small part of the entire equation that it just doesn't really, like it doesn't pop up on my radar.
Yeah, cool. Awesome, man. Love it. I love different opinions on things. It's like, don't get too caught up in that. But yeah, if it gets you the outcome, and I think it's the level of thinking that you've been talking about today, right? It's like, as long as you understand the process and all of that, and as long as the software does that, it doesn't necessarily matter just because it's a new software, it's a shiny new thing. And you don't have to change everything if you still got the fundamentals and you go through the process, which is important. What do you think about, I guess, the customer journey? I think this is an interesting one on for B2B, because it, like we talked about, it can be longer. Should this be really analyzed? Because some people may think there's a certain customer, some people might not know, number one. Some people might have some sort of customer journey, but maybe it's not really that optimized and there's a lot of wastage or time being missed. And obviously, depending on the marketing strategy, the customer journey can be different at the same time. So I'd love to hear your thoughts around that, customer journey elements.
Yeah, I mean, that one is a bit individual to each different type of business, right? And it also depends on like, because the way that I think about it, I think about it at a wider level. I think about it from like, not just like, where have we got the leads coming in from and when have they converted? It's also like, the conversion for me isn't actually where it ends. It's like, how do we keep this client for the next 5 or 10 years and get them to refer new clients to us every single month? So I think with the end in mind, I'm like, okay, because we're in lead generation, like luckily we've got this idea of, you know, if we need leads, we can find leads. Leads isn't like the main issue. It's like, how do we not do that? How can we not do lead generation and just focus on doing such a good job that we don't have to do lead gen? That's kind of the, so I start with the end in mind and I go, what would it look like for this to be a 10 for most of my customers? So obviously the top thing is we've got to get them leads. We've got to get them results. We've got to get it for them quickly. We've got to be responsive. We've got to be very open with them. So like these are the things I think through, but at certain points, I also think, where are the points that we can where we can surprise and delight them? Because it is a human relationship, even though there's, you know, the thing that you think we sell, it's leads, right? It's growth. But the relationship is actually an important part of that product. So we look at, you know, when they first start with us, typically we send, a very nice gift to our new clients at a certain point. So like whether it's 6 or 12 months, we send another gift. So for example, we think of it as like dating, right? If you're dating, just started dating, at the very beginning, you've got to impress, you've got to like go through all the effort. I'm not saying you don't later on, but that's when you typically have the most effort. But every single year, people tend to have anniversaries and they go out and they do something special. So we think through that, like, can we do like an anniversary of our clients every single year? But also throughout the year, what can we do to make it, you know, to surprise and delight them? Whether it's buying tickets to this event for them, whether it's just popping around and say, hey, can I take the entire team out for lunch? Whether it's sending them books that we really liked, you know, it doesn't take a lot of effort or time or money to really just invest back into relationship. But it's so worthwhile. It pays itself in just over and over and over again.
Yeah, I love that. That was gold there with, creating those raving fans, those great partners, and then, be able to get those connections. And that's really big, right? If you can get into different relationships in the B2B space, especially, you can cut down that sales cycle, right? And not have to spend all the money on the marketing as much, or just keep them because they're advocating for you, right? In that way, and they love what you do, and they'll just continue moving down and everything like that there. So love that. That was very powerful, mate. And it's been a very, very powerful episode. A lot of gold that you've shared today, Will. And I guess as we're starting to wrap up, what one key piece of advice would you like to give to all the entrepreneurs watching and listening today?
I think the main thing, and that's a good question, because it's like, what can I say that's going to encapsulate or give some kind of value to the entire audience who could be very, you know, different in terms of their journey and kind of where they are. I guess the main thing I would say is don't overcomplicate the process. Think of it from your customer's perspectives. And I think, and we're guilty of this, like, we don't do this enough, but if you can just go and spend a day with your customer and just hang out with them and get to know them, talk to them, you're going to get so much value back. That's the real gold, not the stuff around like, you got to do 10-step funnel. Like, that's no, like what your customers are saying and feeling and expressing, that's the absolute gold. And the flip side of that, just simplify, like, simple fails, complex simple scales, complex fails. I think that's a Hormozy quote. So simple is really, you know, you can replicate that. You can just do it over and over again. When you get complicated, things fall over. It's just a waste of time. So keep it simple. Don't overthink it. Don't think you need like a million step funnels. Just what problem do you solve? How do you solve it? And, you know, what results do your customers get when you solve the problem for them?
Yeah. Awesome, man. Thank you. Really great points there. Completely agree with all that. And we connected to our networks. I learned about your awesome journey from starting as the freelance copywriter to now, you know, founding Growth Labs with your B2B marketing. I'm sure, awesome guy, very knowledgeable, a lot of gold shared today. I'm sure you continue to help B2B SaaS tech and fintech companies grow. And very grateful that we connected and look forward to working with you. So, Will, how can people find you, get in contact with you?
Yep. So the best way to do that is either through my website, which is growthlabswithaz.com, or find me on LinkedIn. So I'm either Will Wang or William Wang on LinkedIn. LinkedIn's kind of where I chat. So maybe message me there first. But if you can't find me, shoot me through an email from my website.
Awesome. Definitely check out Will on the website and his LinkedIn profile and connect with him there. If you want to take it to the next level and connect further. And it's been a pleasure interviewing you, mate. And thank you for being on my show.
I think that you've had awesome questions. Been so fun. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you, everyone, for watching and listening to this show where we talk about everything on business growth. And please like, subscribe, and leave us a 5-star review. You can find me on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube as Ethan Cassiotis, or visit my website, ethancassiotis.com. If you want to grow and scale your business, you can reach out to me on any platform to see if we're a good fit. I completely agree with you, or do I? The only way you know is if you tune in next time. So until next time, remember that our business grows when we learn skills and take action using them in spite of fear. So remember to design your growth and results.